On the show today, we have ITA Group's very own Julie Conroy giving us the latest report on synthetic identity fraud, the elephant in the room. So check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show, and on today's program, we have one of our favorite recurring guests, Julie Conroy from ITA Group. How are you, Julie?
I am doing great. How are you today, Mike?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for asking. Hey, as we were talking before the recording, I was like, I saw this story come across my desk or email desk, whatever you want to call it. It's called Synthetic Identity Fraud, the Elephant in the Room, and I couldn't resist. I had to get you back on the show to find out what is all this about. So before we get started with the report about this, I mean, so what exactly is synthetic identity fraud? Because I think this is kind of a new term for a lot of people.
So synthetic identity fraud is where the organized crime rings that are behind so much of the fraud actually create people. And okay. They just create new people out of the ether. And then they will use those new identities that they have fabricated to apply for new bank accounts, credit cards, loans, car loans, you name it. Any way they can get some money.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, they'll nurture these identities for quite a while, and then they'll just disappear. And so when financial institutions, lenders go looking to collect on these debts that are outstanding, yeah, there's nobody to collect them because there were no people to start with.
Well, I mean, my next question is, how do they create these identities or these people? I mean, are they just like fictional people, or are they stealing other people's identities, what we've heard in the past, or how does this work? What happens here?
So there's a few ways that they do it, and this is actually one of the challenges as the industry tries to get its arms around addressing the issue. Yeah. Is there are different definitions for what a synthetic identity is, depending mm-hmm. on who you talk to. And there was actually one financial institution executive I interviewed that said, if you ask three different people in three different lines of business in my bank what synthetic identity fraud is, you're going to get three different definitions. So there's a few ways that they do this. First is they can just create a brand new identity out of nothing.
Wow.
And that's a lot easier to do now ever since 2011, when the Social Security Administration started randomizing the issuance of Social Security numbers. So we no longer have some logic to check to say, is this date of birth consistent with the issuance sequence of this Social Security number? Mm-hmm. You can't do that anymore. So that is making it a little bit easier.
Okay.
In addition to the fabrication, there's also what we call identity compilation, where you take the 9+ billion records that have been breached since 2013, and you take a little bit of Mike's identity, you take a little bit of Julie's identity, mm-hmm. throw in the bad guy's email address so that he can communicate with the institution, and you compile a whole new identity and then start transacting on it that way. And what these guys are understanding, because they study their targets very intensively, mm-hmm. is that if you manipulate the identity here and there and it doesn't match up to an existing credit bureau record, oftentimes the credit bureaus establish a net new record the first time they see this identity reported by a lender. And so they'll often start very small. So they'll leverage the fact that many lenders put not as many hurdles in front of somebody that wants to add an authorized user to mm-hmm. an existing credit card. Mm-hmm. Because for every authorized user that gets added to a credit card, you typically see a 30% bump in revenue.
Right, right.
So oftentimes, you know, that was one of the common entry points, is piggybacking and springboarding off of an existing line of credit, set this person up as an authorized user, then that new identity gets reported to the credit bureau mm-hmm. as a standalone identity, and boom, you have the beginning of a new credit record. They'll very patiently nurture these over time, and you know, the average among the folks that I interviewed was about 18 months that they'll nurture these synthetic identities. And actually there were a few that said that they'll nurture them as long as 5 years.
Good grief.
Before they bust out. And then once they bust out, they just leave all of those lines of credits hanging and that identity disappears.
Oh my God. I mean, this is just mind-blowing to me. I mean, there's just every time I talk to somebody like you in this field of work, I mean, there's just something else that just is just so outrageous, so stranger than fiction type of stuff that just, oh my gosh, the creativity, you got to hand it to him for the creativity. I mean, you get an A for effort there, big time. But in the report...
Dedicate that effort to good.
Exactly. If you can just switch sides. But anyway, so the report says it's the elephant in the room. So why is it the elephant in the room? What's going on here?
So synthetic identity fraud actually isn't new. It's been around for a while. I actually published a report on this topic 5 years ago. But it's been getting bigger, a lot bigger.
Okay.
We kind of have this perfect storm forming around synthetic identity with that social security number randomization I told you about, as well as the fact that we have just this unprecedented amount of data in the hands of criminals with all the data breaches.
Yeah.
Plus, we've been in a very steady credit recovery for the past 7-8 years now. And so lenders have been extending more credit, and their credit policies are a little bit looser. So it's made it easier to establish these net new identities and nurture them. Where, you know, again, it's been around for a while. One of the challenges traditionally at financial institutions was many, many times these synthetic identities actually didn't get detected as fraud at all. And they got written off as credit losses.
Oh my gosh.
So you have somebody that got a new credit card, they ran up a few charges, $5,000, $6,000 worth of charges, and then they never paid a bill, and they just went away. And actually, credit policy is, if you've got a never-pay default, then that gets written off as a credit loss. And so a lot of this stuff has been hiding in the credit write-offs. And financial institutions are now starting to realize that they're seeing these inexplicable shifts in delinquency curves. And they're seeing these degradation to their credit models that really aren't explainable by anything else but synthetics.
Ah, gotcha.
And I spoke to one very large financial institution as well as one consulting firm that goes in and actually works with FIs to go and analyze their credit files to understand how much of this truly is credit loss versus synthetic. And they told me that they found in the credit files as much as 20% of their credit write-offs were associated with synthetic.
Oh my goodness.
Which I actually asked them to say that back to me to make sure I heard it right. Number.
Yeah. That is significant. No wonder it's the elephant in the room. So are people acknowledging this now? Now that it's such a high number, is it starting to come to the forefront now as opposed to sound like it was kind of bubbling under the surface there for a while?
It is. It comes up in just about every conversation I have about new account and enrollment fraud with financial institutions. So we're starting to see folks dedicating analytical resources against it, additional digital channel analysis of the identity, you know, looking for tells like the email address. You know, has it been around for 5 or 6 years, or has it been around for 1 month? Little things like that. There's no silver bullet, just like with all types of fraud.
Right.
But if you can put together enough of these points of analysis, you can hopefully detect it a bit earlier in the process.
Yeah, because that was my next question, is like, how do you detect it? Because one of my questions was, any solutions yet? But I think the more appropriate question is, how do you detect it? So, and then mitigate it or reduce it, eliminate it, whatever the term you want it to be. So is there a couple of steps you can do or something like that, or just based on what you've heard?
Well, there's lots of different vectors, and you really need to combine them effectively. You know, one of them is just looking at how that credit record was first established. And did we first see this person as an authorized user that was added on? Now, that in and of itself is definitely not enough, because the authorized user also could be somebody that is brand new to credit and got added onto their parents' credit card. But if you look at that in combination with, as soon as they got added on as an authorized user, did they have an abnormal velocity of applying for additional lines of credit? Were they trying to build the reputation of this credit line very rapidly? You know, do they have an email address? Do they have a social media profile? Because social media, again, if you're new to credit, you know, if you're a teenager in this country, you probably had some sort of a Facebook account.
A little bit. Or Snapchat now.
Yeah, I'm dating myself here.
Facebook.
But then once you find it, the other question is, what do you do about it? Mm-hmm. Because, again, these organized crime rings very patiently nurture these accounts. And so some of the usual ways that you try to vet new accounts and determine if this person is who they say they are, mm-hmm. you know, if you detect some anomalies, do you ask them some knowledge-based authentication questions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that doesn't work with synthetics because they've already established the history that establishes all those knowledge-based authentication questions.
Mm-hmm.
So they know the answers. There was one very small credit union that I talked to for this research that they have less than $1 billion in assets.
Yeah.
And they had just, within the past few months, taken $200,000 worth of losses due to synthetic identity fraud.
Oh my gosh.
This ring hit them with synthetic identities, got a bunch of credit cards, a couple auto loans, busted out $200,000 later. But you know, they were telling me that at the time of onboarding, these identities looked pristine.
Mm-hmm.
Passed the identity verification with flying colors. This particular credit union requires everybody that opens an account online also to do knowledge-based authentication questions.
Right.
They passed every single one of those.
Wow.
And the other question is, okay, you think you have one. You think you have a synthetic identity.
Yeah.
You can't really request, you can't do a one-time password ping to their mobile device because they're going to have a mobile device in the synthetic identity's
mm-hmm,
name.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what people are doing on the remediation side is if you think you have a synthetic, maybe put it into a higher risk monitoring group so that you can detect anomalous activities mm-hmm. in early life.
Mm-hmm.
Have some restricted credit lines associated with the account. Or put them through a manual review queue and request, you know, send us a copy of your utility bill.
Right, right.
And people say the latter is pretty effective, but you know, how do you know it's a synthetic going away and not a genuine applicant who just gets fed up with the friction?
Right, right. Oh my gosh. Oh my God. What a pickle. Oh my goodness. Pardon the technical terms there, Julie, but that is a pickle and a half. My gosh. I mean, because like you said, the credit union who that member, they passed all the tests, all the requirements with flying colors, and all of a sudden they have, you know, a $200,000 loss. I mean, what do you do? I mean, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge,
yeah.
But at least it's one that we're now recognizing and starting to address.
Very cool. Gosh, I mean, I don't want to steal all your thunder here from this report, but I mean, is there anything else you want to, any other kind of important items or any takeaways that we should be, that folks can get from this report? But I also want people to go to your site and get the report too. So I don't want to just, if you have like a nugget or two, that would be really cool as well.
You know, I would say just kind of the parting comment would be, it's really important for the fraud and the credit risk folks to collaborate on this problem because it is very much a shared problem.
Yeah.
And so they really need to work together to collaborate on coming up with the right solutions.
Indeed, indeed. And last question, where can we find this report? Because it sounds pretty compelling to me.
So you can go to www.aitegroup.com. That's mm-hmm. A-I-T-E group.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find the report there.
Very cool. And my last question, I lied, Julie's like, how do you sleep at night knowing all this stuff? My gosh, you must wake up like, oh my, I mean, how do you keep from tearing your, because you know more than the average person walking down the street, all this stuff.
It's like, I am very cautious with my electronic devices.
I bet you are.
My identity frozen. You know, I'm a little paranoid.
A little bit. We're all going back to cash or the bartering system or something like that. My gosh. All right. Well, I'll let you go, Julie. Thanks again for your time. As always, we appreciate it. And keep up the good work there. This information is awesome and very educational for a lot of folks out there. So thank you again for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too.